You know, society, they like the way this guy makes ice cream, but the other guy, they don't like his ice cream that much, and they don't buy it, so it fades out.
What's that?
Supply and demand.
Free enterprise.
Competition.
The profit motive.
Down on the economy, stupid.
Where is it?
From everywhere, everywhere.
Welcome to this emergency edition of Everyday Economics, Lanny Zrill,
Grégoire Maillard, and Justin Leroux.
So the reason that we called this emergency podcast, or this bonus edition of the podcast, is because there's been some interesting developments with respect to this crisis that we're all living through that have some kind of interesting economic content. In particular, I kind of noticed looking online and reading the news that people didn't have a good understanding of why some of these new policies have been implemented. And so the two policies that I'm kind of thinking about that are most salient for most Canadians and certainly Quebecers is first the restriction from the federal government on travel, or on international travel, where they require now a negative test within 3 days of traveling back to the country. And then the second thing is, you know, just last week, the government of Quebec installed a curfew at 8 p.m. every evening, and hopefully to try to combat this sort of post-holiday surge in the virus. And people, again, seem to not have a good grasp on, you know, what was this policy supposed to do, or what effect did they expect it to have? Because it does seem, you know, a little bit puzzling and doesn't match, you know, maybe the strategies that are being used in other provinces, though, of course, you know, Quebec is not the first place in the world to institute a curfew. Many European countries have done similar. So it's not unprecedented, but people still don't seem to understand it very well. So I think that's where I wanted to go with this. I think maybe a good place to start is with the curfew. And so I think that, you know, when we talked about originally having this meeting, we joked that, you know, we got the curfew that we deserved. So the first thing that we might think about is, you know, like, well, why are we in this situation? How come the government of Quebec felt necessary to take such an extreme step?
So it seems to me that we got to this point where it felt necessary to install a curfew is because there was this, basically Christmas was canceled. I mean, in Quebec, right? In the province of Quebec, they said from the 24th of December, all the stores will be closed. You can't see your family. You can't hang out with anybody unless you're, you know, you're a person that lives by yourself and you can see it. There's an exception, but overall you can't hang out with other people for Christmas. You cannot hang out with other people for New Year's either, New Year's Eve. Yet, and this was a 2 weeks kind of shutdown with the hope that the number of cases of new cases would fall, and it didn't, and it kept surging and surging. It went all the way to 3,000 in one day, for Quebec is a big number, the province of Quebec, and so obviously. It seems that a lot of people did not follow the guidelines. In fact, there was this newspaper article where about 40% of people admitted to have violated the guidelines. So that's the people who admitted it. So imagine how many people actually ended up hanging out with their relatives. And it's understandable, you know, you want to hang out with relatives. This is not to put the blame necessarily, but come on, right? The guidelines are there for a reason, and they were not followed. And so then the next thing was a curfew. So you may wonder, why put another layer of guidelines onto guidelines that were not followed in the first place? So we can discuss that. But the reason why we're there, where we're here now, is because of our behavior. So in that sense, we said that jokingly that we deserve this curfew, although I don't know how joking it is.
Well, I do agree with that, but I also think that there's a problem of consistency from the Quebec government, because the second wave did start way earlier, and they only closed shops after Christmas for economic reasons. They could also put in place a real lockdown to solve the problem, but it's only a curfew. And for example, primary and secondary school are still open. So whatever, children are still spreading the disease. And Justin, you seem to disagree.
Well, I mean, we can have differing opinions, but it's clear that the cases don't come from schools, from primary schools at least.
So I don't think that is clear. I've seen data both ways. That people who suggest that there's very little transmission happening in schools and other people who are absolutely certain that this is what's been driving the second wave.
Well, the secondary school, not primary school.
So I'm not sure I saw the distinction, but I've seen a lot of people who very strongly felt that all of these schools all the schools were responsible. But there is some debate. I'm not saying that I have a monopoly on the right information. There seems to be some conflict in what people believe here. But there are people out there who believe very strongly that the foundation of this second wave is school. So there seems to be some uncertainty here.
But that's going to be useful for later, because we're going to talk about the fact that we don't know a whole lot about this, about the vaccine, but we'll save that for later. I see your point. I'm definitely biased because I'm a parent of a young boy who goes to primary school, and we almost learned that schools were going to shut down.
Yeah.
We're going to be closed for an entire month. At this point, I don't know if I could have handled it. I felt like I was going to go on strike and just...
Well, so I think that, you know, I mean, while we're talking about it, there are some very good arguments for, you know, having small children in school be the sort of primary focus of our public health and economic policy, sort of on two dimensions. So one is, you know, I think that there is, you know, consensus among pediatricians that small children are like the most vulnerable in terms of their development and mental health. And so one of the big reasons that was pushed, even before we had data on what was happening in the schools in terms of transmission, was, you know, regardless of how bad the transmission is, it's so bad for their mental health to be isolated, they absolutely have to return to school. And so if we want to say that, you know, the one thing that we want to remain open in our society is, you know, elementary schools, I think like there's something to back that, and I can certainly live with that. There's also some economic evidence that suggests that if we care about the economy, this is also the right thing to do. Because it turns out that a large fraction of GDP really depends on parents' ability to work instead of taking care of their own children. And so this is also good economic policy. So I think that, you know, if we were going to keep one thing, maybe elementary school is that thing. Now, this is where, Greg, like, I think it was interesting that you raised this, because I don't think the curfew is necessarily like a public health strategy per se, or like an optimal public health strategy per se. I think it is just a really heavy-handed way to stop people from hanging out with each other. Not because this is necessarily the main driver of transmission. I've actually also now seen conflicting data on this that said actually these private gatherings aren't as problematic as we once thought they were. And then I see other people, again, reputable people, saying, no, this is the main thing doing it. But whatever the case is, if we have a baseline of transmission that's occurring that's already overloading our hospitals, and we want to make sure that small children can go to elementary school, then cutting back on everything else really does seem prudent. And since people just, you know, so, you know, to be fair, like, I actually think that the Quebec government tried to treat the population like adults. And I really like commend them for actually trying to do that, because had it worked, it would have been really nice to be able to say, like, hey, guys, like, we didn't have to use the stick all the time to get you to comply. You all recognize that it was your civic duty to do the right thing. And look at us. We've come through this really well together. And I think to a certain extent, Quebec has actually done an excellent job. If you want to compare, for example, the numbers in Ontario versus Quebec, you know, perhaps along these dimensions, Quebec has actually been relatively successful, but not successful enough. And so, unfortunately, you know, the government was really left with very little choice but to say, look, like, we tried telling you what the right thing to do was and giving you the opportunity to make the right decisions, and you decided, at least as a society, not to do so, and this is all we have left. You know, you're now trapped indoors, you know, and again, it's not to keep people indoors. It's just people need to stop hanging out with each other, whatever amount that's contributing to increasing cases.
And also maybe that instead of a curfew, maybe we could actually have an actual lockdown, as they used to do in France. which would mean that we could only go out to shop groceries, and also to avoid that people see other people for some time, because for example, even if I cannot see anyone after 8 p.m., there's nothing holding me back to see people at 7 p.m. or even before.
Yeah, man, I have to have my... that means you have to do your aperitif at 5 p.m. and then you have your dinner at 6. And so everything is... There's no more time to work now, you know? This is really, really hurting the economy. I see you... I think... So what you're saying, Greg, is, well, the whole, I guess the assumption is that most people work during the day, right? And so the reason it's 8 p.m. is because they have to have time to come home. And so are you saying that the people that would hang out together are the ones that really don't have, that have very flexible schedule and that would actually choose to work at night and so that they could hang out during the day, or?
Well, that's a possibility, but...
Maybe we just gave somebody an idea. So I hope that's not the case.
But, you know, I mean, this is just good economics, right? You know, you created this constraint and people are going to work themselves away from that constraint if they can. So, I mean, you know, we have this, you know, kind of natural rhythm to our lives where, you know, we do certain things at certain times. But especially during the pandemic, I think all of those things have become more flexible. So like in the regular world, you know, prior, you know, March 13th, 2020, if you wanted to hang out with your buddy at 3 p.m. and you called them out, was like, hey, let's meet up at 3, they'd laugh at you because they had to go to work, right? But, you know, these days, everything's a little bit more flexible. So maybe, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we're going to hang out at 3 because like 3 is when we can hang out. And instead, I'm going to do a couple extra hours of work when I'm locked indoors. You know, so I mean, I think obviously it's an empirical question whether people will actually do this. But as long as people are good economic thinkers, you know, this is probably what they should try and do. So in that sense, Greg, I agree with you. Maybe, you know, it should have been an even heavier handed policy, which is you're not allowed out of your house, period, unless it's to get groceries or do something that, you know, is essential.
And also when I was talking about a lack of consistency from the Quebec or Canadian government, we could take the example of traveling, because like since the beginning of the pandemic, there's no foreigners that can actually enter in Canada. But what we have seen in the last past weeks was that a Canadian can actually go in Bahamas, for example, or in the South, as they say, and then come back. But as we said before, it's in the middle, like they're not restricting everyone. So the pandemic can actually continue, even though they could.
So I always found this confusing. So I think, you know, before Christmas, you know, when Quebec had thought maybe we can all have Christmas together or made the promise, you know, if you guys all behave yourself, you can have Christmas. At that moment, all these Quebecers were flying to Florida to go hang out, planning to come back for Christmas to hang out with their family. And this to me just seemed totally insane. So that was very weird. And you're right. Like it wasn't restricted at the time whatsoever. And there does seem to be some real aversion from the government to say like, you know, Canadians, you cannot leave the country unless it's for, you know, like a really legitimate reason. And so instead, in my opinion, they created a really clever policy. So like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, right, the policy that you need to have a negative test, you know, within 3 days of entering the country is really inconvenient. And so I think it makes it for people who are planning on going on a trip, they're going to think, well, if I go to the Bahamas, for example, am I going to be able to find a test and return, or maybe I shouldn't go at all? And so I think, you know, because the policy didn't say don't travel, it was, you know, a little bit more palatable, but ultimately has the same effect, right? You create this really difficult thing to satisfy. And people are going to use it in their decision making. So from my perspective, like it's good public health policy, it's good economic policy, it's good politics. It's a pretty good policy, I think.
Yeah. So I think maybe it's a good time to point out that, you know, you say it's a good economic policy. Where I think it needs to be clear that we're talking about economics in a broad sense. You know, a lot of people think economics is just about money, it's just about GDP and dollars. But here we're talking about incentives and having people incur a cost, which could be a financial cost. I mean, I guess you do have to pay for a test abroad, but it's mostly the inconvenience, which is a costs related to time. Maybe you spend, you waste a day of your vacation having to deal with this this test. You just you worry about whether you're going to get this test done in the 3-day window that you need to get it done. You know, so all of this is a psychological cost that you end up incurring, and this is why we feel that it's a relevant way to label it economics policy. I think it was worth putting out there.
But I think the biggest inconvenience on that point is the quarantine when you return. Like actually, right now I'm in quarantine. I'm in my 11th day of quarantine, so I still have 4 days. And yeah, but what was funny also about the quarantine was that in the past, Trudeau was making possible for people who were losing money because of the quarantine that they could be compensated for thousands of dollars. Which doesn't exist anymore. But
yeah, that was a mistake. It shouldn't have been applied, right? They recognized that it should not have been applied to people coming back from traveling. But I think the whole point of the quarantine is something that's very difficult to enforce. But that test, that negative test when you cross borders, is possible and easy to enforce. And it's the same thing with the curfew. The reason they did the curfew in Quebec, they're doing it, is that it's just a lot easier for cops to say, look, you should not be outside at this time of the day or the night, and you're going to get a ticket. And that's it. It's really about enforcement. And it's about people. Again, it's an economics decision in the sense that when people go out and they go against the recommended guidelines, they are thinking about what is the probability that I will get caught, and well, how much is it going to cost me if I get caught. And so by making enforcement easier, it's increasing the probability that people will get caught if they go against guidelines. Whereas so far, up until the curfew in Quebec, you would basically would do whatever you want, unless you were a shop owner and it was clear that you should not open.
Also, what I find that the Quebec government is doing good is when it deals with putting the right prices for fines. For instance, if we compare to France, when you get caught, people are paying something like 200 of Canadian dollars, but here, it's 1,000, and it can even be 6,000 of Canadian dollars. And so this is absolutely not the same risk that those populations are facing. And so there's a bigger incentive to comply here in Quebec.
It's pretty good for government income.
Well, and I didn't read too many mistakes from the police. I think one of the things I was worried about is that the police would not be very good at using their judgment. I think that, you know, the police that drive around in cars, and this is going to be maybe an unpopular opinion, really good at chasing bad guys.
And you know, donuts, if you go with the stereotypes. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm trying to be as generous to them as no, absolutely. I mean, these guys are in tremendously good shape. Like, if you need someone to chase down a violent offender, those police officers are your guys. You know, but when it comes to exercising, you know, judgment in a novel situation, I don't know that that's what they're trained to do. And I don't know that that's the type of people who become police officers. So I was a little bit worried that, you know, the police officers wouldn't be very good at exercising judgment about, you know, when is it appropriate to give the fine. And so I sort of wondered if 2 days after the curfew, are you going to rereading all of these articles about like the police officers ticketing someone who's, you know, walking their baby around the block because they, you know, can't sleep, you know, or things, you know, that just come up, right? That I think are probably, you know, things that we would want to have, you know, be reasonable exceptions, but we don't want to make them explicit so people don't take advantage. And I haven't seen a lot of that, with one, you know, important exception, which maybe is a topic for a different day, where a few homeless people have been ticketed, which is, you know, I mean, I wrote my MNA about that issue and got a very unsatisfactory response, unfortunately.
What's an MNA?
So I don't know, how come I'm the only one who knows that? I told this
an acquisition is what we
No, they're the member of the National Assembly. Sorry. So I said the same thing to my wife, and she also was like, what is that? And like, I'm not a Quebecer. How am I the only one who knows what this thing is? So so I wrote the government and said, you know, raised my concerns. But generally speaking, aside from a few blips, I think that you know, they seem to be doing a good job of not being overzealous with the tickets, but still enforcing the rules, certainly a whole lot better than they were enforcing the rules prior to the curfew, where I think over the holidays, they gave virtually no tickets out, which to me is crazy. I mean, it should have been a gold mine. They should have been running around ticketing everyone. But, you know, so I think that this was a, you know, if I'm, you know, I'm obviously I want to be fair to the government. I said nice things about the you know, implementation of this earlier. You know, one thing where I think the government failed is that, you know, they just didn't find people nearly enough in the fall. And you know, and I think that that's partially why we're in the situation we're in, is it seemed like the rules that were here previously just had no teeth. Whereas now the fines are big. If they're giving them out, then hopefully people will remain worried about getting the fines and modify their behavior as such.
And to me, that's the disappointing part, is that we had to go there. I'm sorry. I feel like this is a, you know, we say as a society, we deserve this thing. Well, fuck that, right? I respected every single guideline because I really, really want very badly to stay in a situation where, you know, we can still go to work and we don't have to be with our kids all the time. And I, you know, I love my son to death, but, you know, he needs to go see his friends. I need to have my own time to be able to work. And it pisses me off that some people don't care. And the rationale that, well, you know, this is my decision and I take the risk and whatever, this is bullshit, because as long as you don't suffer the entire consequences of your action, you can't say that I'm going to, this is my decision and whatever the risks are I'm taking. So unless there's a fine, and this is what economic policy is good at, is at making it such that the actual risk falls on you. You know, so it's the same in climate policy when we say, okay, you're emitting a ton of carbon and this is going to have impacts down the road. Well, you know, we summarize all these impacts down the road into a price of carbon, and we charge you this much. And this is why, you know, and why businesses and people who drive their cars don't need a fine and they need a price of carbon to do it. I can understand, because it's kind of a remote thing. It's very hard to be concerned with something that takes place over time that there's so much uncertainty about. So that's fine. But when something like a pandemic, we've been indoors so much all the time. And although I can see some exceptions, people are like really going nuts and really being fragile mentally by not seeing people, I can understand, like, this is and it should be allowed to have these kinds of exceptions. But overall, I don't think we've risen to the challenge. And this is why it comes to us having to have sticks. And I actually think it was, yes, there were no teeth on the previous policies, but I actually was hoping that they would work. And I'm glad that we tried it. We tried it to doing like you said, do it like adults, but we were not able to do that. I don't know why I say we, because I don't include myself in that group. And this is what drives me nuts, is because there's people out there who've been doing the right thing, or at least doing what they're told, and they have to suffer the consequences just like everybody else. And that's a bummer, right?
No, absolutely. Like, I'm saddened for the same reason. I think that the vast majority of people have been making sensible choices. And I think, like, there was room for having some social contact.
Not the vast majority. We're talking about the 44% of people who admitted meeting, hanging out with other people. That means there's more than 50%, right? I guess.
So that's true. But, you know, I think that you know, that was unlikely to work out. I think that, you know, the realistic thing was to recognize, and I think this is what Quebec tried to do initially, was that people were going to gather over the holidays, and that meant about being stricter everywhere else. And I think that, like, as a province, we would have gotten away with it if we had behaved ourselves in September, you know, through December. I guess that's all I'm just trying to say, is that I think most people, like, holidays, you know, didn't work out that way, but most people, I think, did follow the guidelines most of the time. And it doesn't take much when you have a, you know, contagious disease spreading to let things get out of hand. And you know, you end up, you know, one person has a house party with 100 people, you know, this has huge ripple effects. And really, those events that, you know, in the absence of these big super spreader events, you know, we all would have been able to have some version of normalcy, maybe not perfectly normal. We could have gathered over the holidays safely. So I think I am disappointed overall in our society, because, you know, you don't want to have rules for everything, and nobody really wants to live like that. But, you know, as a community, we really failed to rise to this challenge. That's for sure. You know, and I like I've followed every rule. I haven't seen another human being more than in, like, passing through the office building in, you know, months now. And yet, you know, I've also had lots of, you know, losses in my life as a result. And so it's difficult to accept that, you know, the behavior of other people has put all of us in this situation. But I'm not sure that the government had any choice anymore. And I just hope that it works and, you know, we can go back to maybe the way things were in the fall when things were relatively stable.
Which leads us to the vaccine conversation.
So, I mean, I was reading about it this morning, so maybe I have a little bit of background on this. But, you know, we do have a vaccine. It exists. People have been vaccinated. I think I read that, you know, 1% of Canadians had been vaccinated already. I'm not sure what they meant. Like, so the article, I think, was supposed to be like, hooray, we did 1%. And I saw 1%. I was like, only 1%? Like, this doesn't seem good. And there do seem to be some real logistical problems with delivering the vaccine. And I think this was to be expected because, you know, we haven't as a society tried to do something like this. Mind you, you know, maybe we just let Amazon do it. They probably had the network to vaccinate people every day. I also saw a joke on Twitter where if you gave, you know, the delivery guys the training, right, to inject people with the vaccine, we would all be vaccinated within a few days, right? So then again, if you've ever been stuck by somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, I'm not sure I'm going to be the first person to get vaccinated by a UPS driver. Even so, the idea here is that the rollout of the vaccine has been very difficult. It's not happening very quickly in Quebec or across Canada. It's even worse in the United States. And so the response to the fact that it's been so difficult, you know, Quebec has taken, you know, what some people, I guess, considered a fairly extreme move, though seems to be quite acceptable to many, which is to delay the second dose of the vaccine for, I think they said 90 days, and it was the max recommended by the Canadian government was 42 days. And the rationale for this was, look, like, you know, we can vaccinate more people if we take the second doses that were meant for the people who were originally vaccinated and give them as first doses to other people right now. And so it's not, you know, necessarily what Pfizer intended, and Pfizer's not very happy about it, of course. But, you know, the government of Quebec sort of made this decision to trade off, you know, what is the optimal way to deliver this vaccine versus how do we get this vaccine into anyone as soon as possible. And so it's, again, it's an interesting example of, you know, sort of this economic thinking, balancing these trade-offs. I don't know that anybody knows whether this was the right thing to do or not. But it seems like, you know, most people are on board. I haven't seen anyone who's, you know, really strongly opposed except Pfizer.
So just before we go on, I have the data in front of me right now. So out of 100 people per country, so how many doses have been assigned? So Israel is by far the leader with 25. So 25 doses per 100 people have been given. Then the United Arab Emirates with 15. And then, you know, there's a big drop. And then there's Europe. And Canada is at 1.22. which is worse than the United States. United States was 3.37, so there's 3 people out of 100 who got a shot.
Wow.
And France is at 0.49, so basically 0.5%. So Canada and Germany are roughly the same, and so it's not a lot. Well, it's not a lot, especially given that it can be 25 in other places, right? So that means there's something to do. Now, why is Pfizer unpleased with this decision to extend the window?
So I think that the difficulty for Pfizer is that if the vaccine is found to be less effective when it's given in that different dosing schedule, people are going to attribute that to Pfizer without reading carefully whether the dosing schedule was followed. Like, so for example, the headline in the newspaper will just be Pfizer vaccine less effective than expected. And that's what everyone will read on Twitter. And they may not read the entire article and realize, you know, that it was because the dosing schedule was changed or whatever.
That's funny because I thought it would go the other way. You know, say you got your doses spread apart by too much, so you need to have a third one, and that's great. That's more money for Pfizer, right? So that's the way I saw it. But you're probably right.
Well, so I think in that case, then Pfizer would be very stoked about the...
Yeah, I thought so. That's the thing.
But they haven't been very stoked. they've been the opposite of that. And of course, it also, you know, we don't know how delaying the dosage affects the efficacy of the vaccine.
Well, we don't know the efficacy of the vaccine either, right? Given that there's this variant going around. There's a lot we don't know over time, right? There's been tests, clinical trials that have established that the vaccine was efficient or efficacy, I don't know what the word is. Anyway, it was working. And but we don't know exactly for how long because the disease hasn't been around for that long anyway. So
Yeah. So I think that that's a little bit why, you know, with Quebec, you know, taking this policy, you know, it's not clear that it's a bad policy or a good policy. I think that there's some good, like prudent reasons for wanting to do it this way. And actually, I heard a very disturbing anecdote the other day and got it off Twitter as usual. So I don't know if it actually happened or if it's just apocryphal or it's just somebody stirring the pot. Maybe it's just a Russian bot trying to misinform me. That's always possible. But basically the idea is that, you know, in somewhere in the United States, so people had showed up to a hospital with a bunch of doses near the end of the day. And the rules were that frontline staff in the hospital could be vaccinated. After that, it was supposed to go to other people somewhere down the list. I don't know what the next category was, but that category of people wasn't in the hospital. And so after they had vaccinated all the frontline workers in the hospital, there was still some vaccines left. And the people at the hospital said, hey, well, why don't you just like vaccinate all these people working in the back in the office building while you're here, or some of these patients over here that are just sitting here in the emergency room. And the people administering the vaccine said, well, you know, like we can't, we're not allowed. They're not next on the list. And apparently what they had to do was dispose of the remaining vaccine because it was the end of the day and it has this really like, it's really sort of sensitive, perishable. And so that instead of just vaccinating anyone that they could see, at the end of the day, the rules prevented them from doing so. And again, I don't know that this actually happened, but this is certainly something that you would want to avoid in this situation, right? Like at the end of the day, if you have 10 more vaccines, stand on the street corner and say, who wants a vaccine? You know, like what have you got to lose? And so I think that from that perspective, you know, what Quebec is doing sounds a lot kind of like that, which is, look, like we're in this like second best situation. We don't really know how well this stuff works anyway, or what's the cost of delaying it. But what we do know is that if we do delay it, we can vaccinate a lot more people. And so again, you know, I don't know if it's the right thing to do. We're going to find out after the fact, probably the hard way. But I mean, we'll see. I don't think it was crazy to do. And it was just sort of interesting about like, trying to take a prudent approach to these things, especially with so much uncertainty, rather than saying, we know this is the best way to do it. And then, you know, 2 months from now, us finding out that they were wrong.
That's the thing. We know so little. So and any decision is, if it's well justified, is a decent decision. I think that's basically what you're saying, right?
Right. And I mean, you know, vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. You know, doesn't sound like a terrible criterion to me.
Well, I mean, given the uncertainty, because if we knew for sure that it would be throwing away these vaccines because they would not be efficient or effective, I should say, then it would be a bad decision.
I think that's certainly,
And so it is already the end of this episode. We hope you enjoyed it, and we invite you to send us your feedbacks on it. And also, this is very likely that we will come back for some other episodes dealing with other different topics. So, see you.